Welcome back to the Ficast. This is episode number 370. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and back on the show as part of our best year ever in 2016. We have, what year is it? It's Jill Coleman. Jill, what's up?
Nothing much. Thanks so much for having me. Super excited to talk about this. Love New Year's so much. So I think this would be good.
Well, of course, JillFit.com is the website where you can check out Jill's stuff. And she is, of course, on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, all over the place. And, you know, one of the reasons why I want to talk to you, you know, some more, and I think the last time I talked to you, we also had that crazy person, Jen Sinclair. And so luckily we can, you know, hang out, you know, without having the distraction. But the, you know, going into 2016 or going into like a new year, a lot of people use that as like a jumping off point to make themselves better, whether it be, you know, fitness and nutrition, mentally, socially, what have you. And you've like done a ton of work on mindset and like making sure like after you figure out where you want to go, all right, how are we going to like chart this out to make sure that we get there and we don't hit an iceberg on the way? So the first thing I want to talk to you about is kind of like I did this with Roger as well. Like I think there's a great – the audience that I have is really great because I have like half of the people that listen to this are in the fitness industry and the other half are just the people that really love this stuff. So I'd like if we could kind of talk a little bit about like maybe in the last year or two, like what you've really learned and the steps that you've made in terms of where you're at in the fitness industry and what advice that you could give people to maybe make sure that they could help improve themselves, like, you know, business-wise as they go into 2016.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for asking that. I always love talking business. To me, business is not, it's really not separate than like my life or my creativity. Like I'm very much a fan of like a work-life integration, especially when you have an online business and you're writing a blog. I mean, and you have a personal brand. So much of it is around your life. So in a sense, you have to find a way to enjoy it. So it's not really work to me. It's more just like, I don't know, lifestyle or whatever. But with that being said, people ask me all the time for advice on how to, like for me in the industry, it was extremely important to for two things. Number one, networking in the industry, because our industry is fairly small. So I know sometimes it feels really big, but to me, it feels actually fairly small. And networking is a huge help. So without like kind of meeting other people in the industry, like Jen and Agar, who are some of my best friends, and putting together something like the Radiance Retreat, which we do together, forming business partnerships with other people. But you don't network by going out and telling people like, hey, I'm this person, I do this. Hey, I'm this person, I do this. Let people come to you by doing really, really, really awesome work, consistent work, and adding massive value. So I know that we hear that a lot. We say, oh, add value, what does that mean? For me, it's very simple. And people ask me, like, especially the girls that I work with, they go, I don't know what to write. I don't know what to blog on. Super simple way to add value is think about what people are struggling with. So if you're a trainer or even you're just at like a family party, listen to the conversation. Some of my best, my most favorite times is being around my extended family because they're not in the industry. So they represent people that I don't always have access to, right? They're not really up on the exercise, not really up on. So I get unique insights into what they're struggling with when it comes to their weight, when it comes to their health, their mindset. And so I'll ask them like, what's the number one thing that you're struggling with when it comes to like weight loss? And they'll be like, well, I can't stop eating at night, or like you just get insights. And you know, so a lot of times we have some of this stuff figured out, not all of it, but we have a little bit more experience. So sometimes it's forget. It's like the curse of knowledge. So go back and listen to what people are asking you. And for every struggle that someone has, write a solution. That's a piece of content. So someone says, I can't stop eating at night. And then I go to my head and I go, okay, what would I tell that person if I was talking to them at the gym? And then I'm going to actually literally write that out in a blog. Here are three ways to circumvent nighttime eating. And it's a solution for a struggle. And that's the easiest way to add value because people need those solutions. And there's infinite amount, isn't there? We could sit around and talk about this stuff and come up with literally like 100 ideas in 10 minutes probably. And so add massive value. And when you do, people start paying attention. But you have to be consistent because it's not going to happen right away. It's going to happen in 6 months, 12 months, 2 years, 3 years of consistent value add for the people who are showing up, which are not going to be other people in the industry. It's going to be your customers, your clients, you know, it's going to be your friends and family, friends of friends and family. And if they show up, you're writing for them. Give them what they need. Say yes. Do stuff for free, whatever you need to do. And the bigger your impact gets, the more other people will start showing up and noticing.
And this is something that I talked a little bit about Roger about. And again, I won't like use names, but you know, someone's been, you know, advertising on Facebook, like, hey, I'm going to show you how to make your own membership website in 5 minutes.
I saw that. Yeah.
Okay. And like who are you talking to, man? Like not everyone should have their own membership website, right? Because like you said, you got to first kind of build up at least like a relationship and some good quality content before you start saying, all right, well, now I'm going to start asking you for money. You got to kind of maybe not even like, I want to use a Field of Dreams reference and that wasn't going to work. But I want to say, if you build it, they will come. But you know, in that case, even if you build a membership website, you put a ton of work into it, they might not show up because like, all right, well, who is this guy? Like,
people don't buy memberships. Like they don't buy like a login and password. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so like, yeah. I think it's actually genius marketing on the person we're talking about. I know who we're talking about. Yeah. I actually think it's like genius marketing because for the person who's a little bit uneducated in, I'm sure he's going to sell a whole bunch of them.
Sure.
Because for the person who's just getting started, they think it's about what program do I write? What thing do I give? What is the name of my coaching? They think it's about the product or the service and it's not, it's about the relationship. And that takes time. I mean, think about it. We're in the trust business. Mm-hmm. So trust isn't earned overnight. It's going to take you literally 3, 6, 12 months of blogging and getting super authentic and super raw and open with your own struggles and your own solutions and where you've been and where your clients have been and sharing that stuff for 3, 6, 12 months before someone's going to want to give you money.
Right.
That's just how it works. So people need to feel like, number one, you get them. And then number two, they might want to spend some money with you. So you can have a membership site all day long. You can put up a PDF, an ebook on your website this weekend. But if you don't have anyone coming to your website, you don't have anyone who knows you, which is the key. And then you're not going to make money. It's a nice gimmick for that person who's selling it. I think he's probably going to sell a lot of them. But hopefully people who are listening to this and we can get the message out there that when you're in the trust business, like we are, it takes time. You don't just like pop up a membership site and make you know, an extra $1,000 a month. That's crazy.
Well, I think it's a big mistake because it sounds crazy, but like we're talking to the Agenda Free segment. Like I've been doing this show for 10 years now and I've gotten to know a lot of people in this industry and I've been able to see a lot of people screw up and a lot of people try to really take their shot before they really aimed. Like they tried to go full on fitness professional, like online fitness guru, before they really knew what they were talking about, and you fall flat on your face. And people, even the people that are not super educated, the customers will see through that. Like they can kind of tell after a certain point if you're just kind of just throwing crap at the wall and hoping people will, you know, want to get a membership website to pay for it.
I think there's one thing to be said for, I think I am a big fan of, if you're just getting started and you're just starting your blog, first of all, no one's reading it yet, but that's normal. We all start with one reader. So people shouldn't get discouraged by that. I'm a big fan of having like at least one thing up on your site for purchase because people, as soon as, I don't care if you have one reader, that one reader might resonate so strongly with you that they want to pay you for coaching.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to at least have some sort of like, oh, I do a 30-minute phone call. Like just have that up there, you know, but the idea that you need to have a membership website and that you're going to be making a whole bunch of money off that, you know, within 3 months or a couple of months, is just not true. But I do think that it is valuable to have something. But look, you might get one person who signs up for coaching calls with you per month for the first 6 months or the first year. And that needs to be fine because you get 6 clients and then you get 12 clients and you get 30 clients and then you get 100 clients. But that takes 2-3 years. So.
Yeah. And it's not a, you know, perfect analogy, but even, you know, doing the show for so long, the first time I ever asked for donations was like 7 years into it, like seven years of free episodes. I'm like, hey, you know, I think like if you like the last 7 years, like it'd be cool if you donated like a little bit so I could pay the massive bandwidth costs of serving 20,000 downloads. So
yeah, no kid. I mean, you probably could have asked for it before 7 years, but
I could have, but it always is a case of, and that's the reason why, like, I kind of like where I'm at right now, because I don't have to handle a lot of the business stuff. Like, there's other people above me that can take care of that stuff. I like to focus on creating the content, and then other people can figure out, all right, well, how are we going to do the billing and all that stuff? I don't want to worry about that. And hopefully I never will, but that's super good advice for people out there. And I guess what are like some other mistakes that you see fitness professionals make, because you're kind of like making a mistake if you're not utilizing the internet to at least reach a broader audience. But how do you do it without, you know, looking like a complete fraud?
Yeah. You know what? I think all of us feel like a fraud. I don't think that ever goes away. But one thing that I can say that is super, super important, and one mistake that I see people making, is not so much that they're copying other people. It's just that they don't have any new information or any new ideas or any new, we talked about this a little bit last time, taking an older idea and re-engineering it in a unique way that is your own. Mm-hmm. So creating something that is a little bit different. So, and having some edge to you. One thing I've been thinking about a lot recently and reading about is the concept of charisma and presence. Mm-hmm. And interestingness, I guess. I don't know if that's a word, but when you're online, you have to have some level of edge to you. And some people, I mean, you need to have some intrigue about you. Mm-hmm. So it's like taking your personality or what you do on a daily basis and putting it up on steroids a little bit online, because that's the kind of, you can't be just like everybody else. You can't have a Me Too business. You can't be like, oh, I really love Jen Sinclair stuff. She talks about strength. I just resonate. So, because we do, right? That's how we get into the industry. That's how we get excited about even creating our own blog, is because we follow bloggers that we really love. And we look up to them and we just resonate so strongly with what they write. Jen has just such a strong voice around female strength that she's like out in front, and she has a lot of people who are saying, I really resonate, really resonate. And then they try and start their own business and they're trying to be a Jen Sinclair 2.0. Mm-hmm. And it's not hitting because it's not authentic to them. They might 100% agree, but they're not saying it in a different enough way, a big enough way, a new enough way to make an impact. Jen's already going to be, you know what I mean? So in a sense, you have to divert, you have to pivot and have some edge to you and draw a line in the sand. So I see a lot of people who are trying to say the same thing, and they're also scared to have an opinion.
Yeah.
In the online space, you need to say, I stand for this, and you need to come out fairly hard against it. You can't be like, well, you could do this, maybe you could do this, or maybe you could do this. No one really knows what you're about, right? If you're trying to please everybody, you've heard this before, if you're trying to please everybody, you end up pleasing nobody. So in a sense, you do want to be a little bit polarizing in your message, because you want people to show up and resonate so strongly with you. And then you want other people to leave because they're just like, you know what, Jill's not my person. She just doesn't get it. And I actually like that effect, because I don't want anyone who, I never want to have to beg people to read my stuff. Either you read it because you love it, or you read it and you're like, it's not for me, and you leave. And that's how it should be. So you have to create that polarization. You have to create that line in the sand and have an opinion. And that can be really scary for someone getting started, because sometimes you get some haters and sometimes you get some trolls and all that kind of stuff. So, but you got to come out big.
Yeah. And it's, and I will try not to retread any of the stuff that I did on the last episode, but I think you've kind of hit on that, like that charisma and also just trying to not be that person that just like complains about other people's success, because unfortunately, and I have this great rule of not spending more, if I'm spending more than 3 minutes on Facebook, then that's my fault if I ever get bugged about anything, because you know, so many people would just be like, oh man, I can't believe this person came up with this product, man, they don't know what they're talking about. It's like, well, you didn't do it. Like you could have, if you think you're better, you know, I really think you should take the time, create your own book or product or whatever, and then prove it. Like, you know, put your money where your mouth is kind of thing. And don't just be that person that complains, because then no one's going to want to hear what you say, because it's just so negative.
I know. One of the things I always say is the person who has the right to do something is the one doing it. And I think that it's,
yeah.
Because I look around and I see people with so many more certifications, right? And it's easy. We all kind of do that. We'll look out and be like, who, especially in the industry, by the way, customers, you guys are not doing this. Like someone who's not in our industry is not looking really at your certs. Mm-hmm. If they're savvy, maybe they are, but chances are they're not. If anyone is, it's probably your peers. Yeah. And it's probably, you know, and if someone's really like critiquing you based on that and not seeing the value that you're adding in the world, then, you know, they're probably a little bit of a hater, probably a little bit of a cynic or whatever. But for me, I think it's so much more important what value you're creating. So I know plenty of people who don't have the certifications. They don't have the schooling. They didn't go to school for this thing. They didn't have the education. They might not even have the look. They might not have, you know, whatever. But they are creating a tremendous value and tons of service for the people who are showing up. I don't care if 10 people are showing up or 1,000 people or 10,000. Mm-hmm. They're creating huge value and they're making waves. So at that point, asking, well, I mean, I know that's fine, but are they NASM certified or whatever? You know, I mean, it's honestly, it's, yes, there are precautions that need to be in place, especially if you're doing training and things like that. But if you're, but let the people who are following, let the customers and the clients decide if they're getting value or not. You know, I don't think that, I think everyone has a right to do whatever they want. And, you know, there's obviously going to be judgments. I don't think we ever get away from that. But in a sense, you can't let that hold you back. I think so many people are just getting started as bloggers are worried more about their peers than anyone. And like your peers, not your customers, right? Like we're not looking at each other's stuff to like follow it. You know what I mean? In a sense, I think if you kind of come out and go, okay, what's the average woman that I'm speaking to? What is she struggling with? Mm-hmm. And that's not going to be a peer. It's not going to be another trainer. It's not going to be, you know, another blogger. It's going to be someone who's showing up to read your stuff. So just focus on that and let people say whatever they're going to say. Totally fine.
Damn, Jill, you're bringing the fire today.
Thank you. I'm kind of sick, so that's good. That's kind of good news.
No, it's probably the smell of the peanut butter banana bread that you made.
It's amazing. It really is.
I'm sorry. We'll try to not go 14 hours with this podcast so you can you can get to it. But so let's try to pivot a little bit to like the people that are not in the industry, the people that are just kind of like looking to, you know, make 2016 the best year that they've had in their life. What kind of prep work do you think people should be doing getting ready to go into 2016 if they want to use that as like, you know, New Year's Day? It's like that's going to be the day and that's the jumping off point I'm going to use to, you know, make sure I can put the mistakes or the bad habits behind me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love that. I'm not a huge fan of resolutions just because I think they're so like nebulous and just kind of vague for most people. I am a big fan of energetic kind of shifts or intentions. And so in that way, I like the idea of looking at kind of how this past year went, looking back at the year and going, okay, what were some of the themes that came up for me? What were the things that were really good? What were things that were not really not so good? What did I learn from those things? I love the kind of intake process of going back and looking at the previous year and then looking forward going, okay, these are some things that I learned. Here's what I want to do now that I know these things, now that I have these lessons, here's where I want to go with that. Mm-hmm. And in terms of prep, I know this is so weird, but this is going to sound weird, but I don't think there is prep. I think you just take action. So there's this book called The As If Principle that actually shows that in research, most of us, we act before we think. So we will do something. And then, I mean, not all the time. A lot of times it's premeditated, but a lot of times we'll do something and then later on we'll explain why we did it. We didn't know why we did it. So I don't know, if you got really angry at somebody and you sent them a nasty email, then, you know, just like, and then later on you're like, oh, why did I do that? And you're like, and then you go back and go, well, I guess I was feeling really insecure because, so we don't actually know a lot of times why we're doing it until later. So for me, that's why I always think action is kind of the first step, because you always win or you learn. So if you do something amazing and it turns out awesome, you're like, wow, I've gotten these successes. I'm moving in the right direction, whatever it looks like. And you know what? Chances are there's a pretty good chance you're going to fall flat on your face. And that's actually fine too, because you always learn. So for me, there are actually no, there's nothing to really worry about. I know it sounds so strange, but I always tell people I would rather people have the full experience, good, bad, ugly, and have that experience and know what's going to work for them than take my word for it. So I know we've talked about that before, and I think it's really important that everyone has their own experience with it. So now we look around our industry, we look at people jumping on fad diets and detoxes and, you know, all this, these kind of cleanses and crazy stuff. And I have a lot of people going, Jill, aren't you mad? These people are doing these things. And I'm like, look, they have to go through the process. I did. You know what I mean? I went through years of yo-yo dieting. I went through years of restarting meal plans every year, every month, every week until, you know, here I am 5-10 years later going, okay, I think I get it now. Everyone deserves that experience. Everyone deserves the full journey. So while I, you know, I hate for them that they're going to be struggling a little bit longer, I'm also just like, yeah, do it. And let's see, like, let's, you're not going to die. Let's come out on the other side and let's figure it out, you know, but go through it and have that your own experience. So to me, it's action. You got to do it.
It's so funny that you say that because, again, an hour ago, Roger and I were talking about how we used to, like, we had no money in college and we were just like, whatever, like, we needed to do, we had to get whatever the new T Nation supplement was, the new biotech supplement, we had to buy it. Like, you had to buy it. And then, like, obviously, we don't do that today, but with, you know, stuff back then, like, we had to learn that, all right, you know, it's okay, I can lift and not need to have surge after my workout. I'll be right. I'll still get some benefit from this training session. I'll be okay. And it is totally just learning about the mistakes of your past. Like, God, like, it is like, you know, blowing smoke up my boss's butt, but like, he uses like the evolution of a strength coach where you like try to just like, you have to kind of make these mistakes and try to just evolve, and everyone needs to do that. So that's an awesome point.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think with nutrition, especially, I talk a lot about nutrition at Jill Fit, there's kind of like a bell-shaped curve. Mm-hmm. So like, if people are kind of not into fitness, not into nutrition, it's not really on their radar, they're not really thinking a lot about food and exercise. They're just like, I eat when I'm hungry. I'm like, you know, they may or may not be in shape. They may or may not be thin. They just kind of, like, it's not even on their radar. Then you start to get like a little taste of like, oh, if I eat these things, my body looks different. Oh, if I lift these weights, oh, my body looks a little bit different. And then you start to kind of get addicted to information. So you go around and you read blogs and you read, you know, books and you get certified and you do this stuff. And it's kind of addicting. Like, it's great because you are learning more, learning more, learning more. At some point you reach a point where you know so much that you feel overwhelmed because you feel like you have to do all these little things feel really important. Oh, I should do intermittent fasting, but then I should not eat after 8 o'clock at night. But then I shouldn't. Should I do carbs after my workout or not? What type of carb is best after my workout? Like, these things, which are interesting, but whether you have a sweet potato or oatmeal after your workout is not going to make the biggest impact on your physique or your muscle growth or whatever. Maybe if you're getting up on stage at the Olympia, it matters. But for the average person worrying about should I have oat bran or oatmeal, which is better? I mean, it's just like the mental energy it takes to worry about that is so tiny compared to the impact that it has on your physique, which is nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. People make it up in their heads to be these big decisions or all this stuff and so nuanced and so like this minutia, but it takes up a lot of brain space to think about all those things when the actual impact in reality on their body and their mood and the way they look and feel is nothing. So I think you, and then you come to this place where you go, okay, actually, if I just do these three things most days, I'll be fine. Like, you get to the point where you've seen all of that, you've experienced all of that, things are not that serious anymore. I mean, I remember early days telling people to get a salsa that was like 100 milligrams of sodium or less. Like, why would I even tell someone that? Like, I'm embarrassed to even admit that that was something that was important back then. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was training competitors and stuff, but now I'm just like, yeah, whatever salsa you like, you'll probably eat it the most. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's not that big a deal. So, but I do think you need to get on the other side of that and go, you know what? It does. How many milligrams of sodium in the salsa means nothing in terms of my long-term results. So why even bother worrying about it?
Jill, like, I used to, you know, again, this is thankfully back in like the college days or even like in high school, but like picking out protein powders based on like, oh man, I just got to make sure it's under 5 grams of carbohydrates per 20 grams of protein.
Like, and if this one had 6, like, you just couldn't get.
No, it's off. It's off. Like,
it's not even considered.
Off the table. No.
It might be the best tasting protein powder and you're like, oh my God, this is the best tasting, but because it had 6 grams of carb, you didn't want to get it. So you get something that tastes like chalk.
Yeah.
Because it had 5 or less.
Oh, man.
It's not rational. But you know what, though? I'm glad we're having these conversations because I feel like this is where I see a lot of people. And I know because I was there for a really long time, mm-hmm. like literally these tiny, tiny decisions. No wonder I was exhausted all the time. No wonder mentally I was back and forth between dieting and then binging because I just didn't have the mental bandwidth mm-hmm. to care after a while because it was like it felt like a full time job. So then you get to the other side. And that's where I'm hoping, that's where I'm trying to bring all the Jill Fit girls along to the other side. We go, you know what? There's 2 or 3 things that if I just do them most days, I'm going to pretty much maintain my weight and it's going to be pretty easy. And I'm going to actually enjoy my process and I'm going to enjoy the food I'm eating. I'm going to actually enjoy my exercise. And that's kind of like the holy grail for me in terms of health.
Did you ever miss competing?
No. You know, it's so funny. I tell the story and I don't think I'm better than or anything like that. I respect it so much, and there are people who can do it, you know, year after year, season after season, and they just love it and they're just made for that, and their bodies are too. My brain wasn't made for that. Like, I just couldn't handle the highs and the lows. For me, I couldn't handle it, and I didn't like it. And I hated the process. I liked the look, but I didn't like the look enough to sacrifice everything else. It takes a tremendous amount of sacrifice, and the people that do it, very, very small percentage of the population can do it, I think, effectively. But it's not that I'm better than, it's just that to me, there are so many other parts of life that are important that just worrying about if your abs are popping or if, you know, you're getting your veins and your abdominals or whatever, it just seems so tiny. I think I think it's important to go through that, but it's funny. I was at actually an infomercial shoot, or I'm sorry, like a workout video shoot a couple months ago. I was there just helping out like with the form and stuff for some of the fitness models that were in the shoot. Mm-hmm. And one of the fitness models was a competitor. She was a professional figure competitor. And so we're talking, and I was telling her, oh yeah, I used to do shows. And she goes, why'd you stop? And I was like, isn't it self-evident? Like, to me, it just was like, because it was just like that lifestyle seems so extreme to me. But at the time, it was all I could see. So I think it's important to honor where you're at. And I don't think there's a better or worse place to be. But for me, it has been an evolution. And for that girl, like, that's what she like loves that. She, you know, she was feeling really bad because she felt like she was, you know, not in shape, quote, in shape. And she was the fittest person at the shoot. I mean, like, by far the absolute fittest, most cut, most muscular person at the shoot. And she was really worried because she didn't think like she was in shape. So when I see that, sometimes I have a hard time going back to that place. I do think it's part of the process, but I have a hard time getting on board with that mentality.
Women, people that are coming to you for help in terms of getting to where they want to go. What are they telling you they want? Does that make sense? Like,
yes.
what do they actually want?
Well, I think it's important to go back to our conversation about business and personal brand and stuff. People who come to you, like, you don't go out and find people. People come to you based on what you create and what you write. So at Jill Fit, I write a lot about moderation. I write a lot about, you know, not being obsessed with food. I write a lot about maintaining your weight. I don't write anymore about, quote, fat loss and getting up on stage and getting super lean and, like, you know, I don't really talk about that anymore. So the people who show up are now a little bit different than they were 5 years ago, mm-hmm. which is totally fine. It's great. And some of the girls who were there 5 years ago have come with me on the journey, which is really cool. So the people who show up now just want their clothes to fit. They want to feel good. Mm-hmm. They want to be comfortable in their body. They want to feel confident. They want their clothes to fit so they don't have to buy a new wardrobe every year. And basically they want to be able to enjoy life, but not have these very highs and lows of eating, these huge swings from deprive, binge. They want to find a way to eat the same every single day of the year, which is moderation 365 for me. And that's kind of what I teach. So I think a lot of them have kids, they have families, they have a lot of competing interests and priorities, and they don't want to feel like eating and exercise has to be a full-time job anymore.
What is, if that is kind of the goal, like getting to a regular pattern of eating habits and not having that up and down, what are some of the initial steps that people can be taking to get there?
Yeah, it's interesting because especially now that it's the first of the year, I think a lot of people probably overindulged over the last month and are feeling gross. And that's understandable. I totally understand. I've been there too. And when you feel gross in your body, like when you just feel stuffed and bloated and all those kind of things, you just want to not feel that way anymore. And so what you do is you do the opposite, right? You do something more extreme. So you go on like a no sugar diet, or you go on like a complete cleanse, or you just say, I'm back on this program. They've actually shown that people are more excited before they start a new plan than when they're actually doing it. So we're in that kind of honeymoon phase right now. We're getting like super excited to get started on our clean plan so that because we can feel that we're not going to feel bloated and stuffed and gross anymore. And so there's a lot of urgency around the first of the year to not feel like this anymore. So I understand that, except that it's the exact opposite thing to do. Mm. And what I mean by that is not continue to binge, but when people binge or when they overindulge, normally it's because they on some level feel restricted or deprived. So if you think about it that way, the best way to not binge and overindulge is to not get to the point where you feel deprived. And in order to do that, you have to give yourself what I call nutritional gimmies. You have to give yourself some nutritional gimmies every single day. Like, so it can't just be, oh, on Friday I can relax with food, or on the weekend I can relax with food, or Saturday night's my cheat meal. Mm-hmm. You have to learn how to feel satisfied on Monday and feel satisfied on Tuesday and feel satisfied on Wednesday, so that by the time Friday comes and it's, quote, the weekend, you feel good. You don't feel the need to overindulge because you could take it or leave it because you felt satisfied since Monday. So while many of us want to go and swing the other way to the extreme stuff and the detoxes and the cleanses, I don't think you should keep overeating either, but I think come back to the middle. So how do you do that? It's choosing something to eat on Monday that's going to help take the edge off for Tuesday. Because remember, what you eat on Monday directly affects what you choose to eat on the weekend. I know it sounds kind of weird, but I'm going to say it again. What you choose to eat on Monday impacts how you choose to eat on Friday, because you need to feel less deprived during the week. And so to me, that looks like having, you know, having some chocolate on Monday, having a single glass of wine on a Monday, if you need to take the edge off on Tuesday. And on Tuesday, you get a salad and you use like ranch dressing on your salad or something, that you put some cheese on it. Then Wednesday you have like, you know, eggs and bacon. Then on Thursday you have, you know, some more chocolate or glass of wine. Like, these are things that, you know, are perfectly fine. They're healthy, but they're not, quote, on a super clean eating diet, right? But when you give yourself these nutritional gimmies and you have this nutritional relief built in, that by the time you get to Friday, you could take or leave the cake. You could take or leave the cupcakes. You could take or leave the dessert. You don't need to drink that entire bottle of wine because you feel good. So the way to get started is to figure out a way to eat moderately on Monday. So don't just go, this woman was like, Jill, you're so right. I woke up and I just had, you know, egg whites and asparagus for breakfast and I feel amazing. And I was like, that's not going to do it. Like, it needs to be like, maybe if you put some cheese on that or add like some bacon, like, I know that that's not going to last, but that's what we think we have to do. So figure out a way to just kind of make your meal a little bit satisfying. I call it the satisfaction factor. How do you increase the satisfaction factor of that meal? Can you add a little bit of avocado? Can you add some, you know, breakfast meats? Can you add some cheese to that? Can you have, you know, I don't know, a Diet Coke even? Like, I mean, I know that's kind of like sacrilege to even mention diet soda, but for some people, they might need to have a Diet Coke a couple times a week so that they don't eat all the brownies on Saturday. And it's fine. It's just, it's giving and taking and picking your battles.
You know, it's so weird. I bought a case of diet, or was it Cherry Coke Zero?
So good.
Like, yeah, but I bought it like 3 weeks ago now. I maybe have had not even like one can a week. I'm almost scared to like drink that stuff because of like, I don't know. Again, it's like, you know, the fear mongering of God, artificial sweeteners, even though the research kind of doesn't back this stuff up a ton. But
I mean, think about like, okay, so look at it this way. I mean, and I think this is a good point because I'm not a huge fan, obviously, of like, you know, I'm not a proponent of artificial sweeteners.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
But you know what though? If having a Diet Coke once or twice a week takes the edge off enough so that you don't eat a full thing of brownies on the weekend, like, to me, it's
That's
fine.
Huge.
Yeah. I mean, cause what's worse? Like, they're both kind of, if you want to talk about poisons, right? They're kind of both poisons. Like, to me, at least we know sugar does have like kind of an ill effect. We know that for sure. And so for me, like, having a little bit of sugar-free chocolate or sugar-free frozen yogurt, oh my God, or using like a little bit of Splenda if you need to, like, you can overdo these things. And I don't think you should do that, but let's be real. Having a single Diet Coke so that you don't eat like 50 cupcakes later, that's what we're talking about. And so, you know, I'm not a huge proponent of that stuff. I don't think it's necessarily health food, but I do think that it can be, it's something I call a preemptive cheat, where you have it before you get to the point of feeling deprived. I think it's very useful. And everyone's is going to be different, by the way. So you need to kind of know yourself. And like, so Diet Cokes don't really do anything for me, but having cheese and like some ranch dressing on my salad is like what totally turns me on, or having a glass of wine at night. So you just have to know yourself and know what things are going to help you stay the course and eat moderately every day, whether it's Saturday or Monday.
You make any mistakes? I don't know. Some people don't like to look back at it as mistakes, but like, did you, you know, in 2015, as we kind of look back and also try to look forward, are there like, you know, big lessons, I guess, learned in 2015, either business wise or, you know, health and fitness wise, that you think people can, you know, you can share it and help people learn from them? Put you on the spot, Jill.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. You know what? I actually wrote an email to my list a couple weeks ago about like my mess ups of the year. But again, like you said, I mean, I know it's kind of a cop out to be like, well, it's all lessons. I mean, and it is. But there are some things that looking back, I was a little bit ridiculous about that. You know what I mean? That when you look back, you're not necessarily embarrassed. And I definitely don't believe in regret. But looking back and going like, oh, yeah, that was a little bit of a airhead moment, or that was like a little bit uncalled for, or that was a little bit over the top. Or, you know, most of my biggest lessons have to do with, you know, I talk a lot about mindset at JillFit, and we talk about mindset in terms of nutrition. I think that's important, and food obsession and your mentality around food. But so much of that extends into other things like your business, your relationships, your sense, your own sense of self-worth, and your own feelings of value and things like that. So my practice continues to be in the emotional realm, and just figuring out ways to be more effective in my relationships. I'm always working on vulnerability. I'm always working on being honest. I'm always working on emotional maturity. And what I say that, I mean like emotional integrity. Mm-hmm. So if I'm sad, allowing myself to feel sad and not judging it. If I feel mad, allowing myself to feel mad and not judging it. If I'm feeling insecure, you know, allow myself to be that way in the moment and not judge it. I think for women, a lot of times we get to this point where we feel like, especially as a coach, you go, oh, I should be over this stuff right now. I should get this by now. This should be easy for me. And it just becomes one more thing that we judge ourselves for. And that doesn't help matter. So one of my biggest practices still is self-compassion, not so much around my body anymore, but mostly around, and not so much around eating, but around like my emotional integrity and being able to really be in touch with my emotions and then allow myself the process of experiencing them and not be scared of them. I know it sounds so weird, but hey, you asked. So that's what it is.
Well said. Well said for sure. You know, I think there's a couple different ways as we kind of get towards the end with this, but, we've kind of hit on this a little bit, but in terms of like, I think it's always interesting to try to help people dig deep into figuring out what they really want. So there's like so many ways to go about, all right, well, yeah, I'm going to go into 2016, but now I'm going to try to figure out what I actually want. So do you have any advice out there for people who are like, yeah, like I know I want something, like I know I want like to fit into those jeans, or I know I want to whatever drop 10 pounds, but trying to figure out what you really want. Do you have any advice for people to help them, you know, dig down deeper, or even just how they should go about setting this up?
I mean, one tool that I really love is called the 5 whys. You've probably heard it before, where it's a psychological technique that you ask when you say something like, I want to lose 10 pounds. Mm-hmm. Then you write it down and then you say why. And then you write, you know, because when I feel better when I'm 10 pounds less. And then you go, okay, well, why then? I feel – and then so you ask why 5 times. And usually by the end of it, it's – you discover some sort of feelings of I want to be more confident. I want to take more action. I want to it comes down to normally a sense of self-worth. If I lose 10 pounds, then I am worthy, or then I'm good enough, or then I'm – that's a lot of reason why I think we want to control our food, right? Or we want to control what goes – our exercise. For me, it was a lot of years of doing, you know, 2-3 hours of cardio a day, thinking that if I just did enough exercise, I could control the way my body looked. And if I could control the way my body looked, then I could control, you know, how I was, if I was accepted or not, if I was loved or not, if I was good enough or not. So I think that a lot of times we use our body as a way to feel good enough. And so I think a lot of it's just, for me, it was asking the 5 whys, getting down to what's that root cause, and then asking yourself at the end, is there any way that I can do work, you know, on this thing, if it's, I want to feel good enough, do I really need to lose 10 pounds to feel good enough? Or could I make the decision to feel good enough now by doing other things, by, you know, self-compassion or positive self-talk, or, you know, starting a blog, or feeling like there are other ways in which I could contribute has nothing to do with the way I look. So asking yourself, one of the things that was huge for me personally, getting away from my body is my worth. And it's ironic because as soon as I started making that mental shift, my body started looking the way that I wanted it to look, because I wasn't so obsessed with how it looked anymore. Is asking, what are other ways that I feel like I can contribute? I'm a worthy person. I can write a blog. I can share something with somebody. I can, I can start an online business. I can start, like a knitting club. I can start a book club. I can do these. I'm actually getting ready in Los Angeles to start doing something called Conscious Dinners with a girlfriend of mine who's also in the industry. And the two of us are going to do like very small, intimate dinners, like by invite only, but having them be very small and like kind of networking slash like just creating this environment of like women, badass business owners who all want to kind of elevate together. So can you create something that is a thing? So you're not always just like, have I lost any weight yet? Have I lost any weight yet? Have I lost any weight yet? Figure out another way. And I think when you find yourself, in these pursuits and following these things and doing something that charges you up, the idea that I need to lose 10 pounds tends to fall away and not be all that important anymore. And it's funny when it starts to be less and less important, I think you'll be surprised at how much easier it is to do the things to get to the gym, to like, to eat right, to eat healthy, because it's not as a huge focus. It's not this battle that you're always terrified of losing. You're more motivated to stay the course because you see it's not all about your looks anymore, if that makes sense.
Oh no, totally. God, that's a really great idea. So, you know, as we start kind of getting towards the end, I also want to make sure we have some time to kind of talk about what you have going on in 2016, because you kind of like you were talking before we were recording, like you're kind of like taking a little bit of a break towards the end of the year, but man, you busted your ass this year with stuff. So like, what have you been working on and what are the plans for, you know, 2016 with Jill Fit and everything?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So last year was huge, huge year for the business. Hugely successful, super happy with how many people we've impacted and, all the solutions that we've created and just how much content was put out and things like that. For next year, some of my personal goals, I still have, I'm getting ready to launch the 4-week Food Obsession Bootcamp in a few weeks, which is one of my flagship programs. It's all about mindset and food. So it's not a weight loss program. It's not like a relationship program. It's all about nutrition. It's kind of like we talked about the satisfaction factor and taking the edge off and these preemptive cheats, a lot of those kind of tools and insights shared in the program. That launches next at the end of January. And my big project for this year is two things. Number one, on the personal front, I'm really looking for a mentor. So I'm really looking for like a very kind of high-end mentorship. It's been a while since I've had that type of coaching. I go to a lot of seminars and I go to a lot of conferences, but I'm really looking for, like kind of a high end one-on-one coach. So obviously you can't ever stop learning. So that's kind of my personal thing. And then, business-wise, I'm actually getting ready to launch a new exercise program in May. So it's going to be like a huge launch. Super excited about it. It's been a couple of years since I've done a new exercise product. So super excited. It's called Treadlift. And, that's all I'm going to say about that. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Good deal. Good year. Hopefully you got like a vacation planned in, you know, the next 12 months too.
Well, I don't know if you talked to Jen or Neg lately, but the three of us are going to Australia and New Zealand the entire month of November. The entire month of February. So we're doing Radiance Retreat there. Super excited. We have 35 women who are going to be at that. Super fun in Sydney. And then we're going to stay and play for about a month.
Badass.
Yeah. So we always play, you know that. We work hard, but we also rest hard. That's like my like rest-based living philosophy.
Well, totally. You got to do it. And
you do.
God, there's probably no better places to be in February than there. Jeez.
I know. The summertime's going to be great. So looking forward to that.
Not bad. Well, that is where we'll kind of wrap things up. And, you know, obviously for everyone out there, if you are a Patreon supporter, you're going to get like another 20 minutes, which one actually ended up being like basically all fitness nutrition stuff. And, you know, that's kind of a good thing. So hopefully you'll stick around and listen to that. And if you are, that means you're supporting the show at patreon.com/thefitcast. You can support the show starting $1 per episode. And that helps me produce this stuff every single week. You guys are the ones that make sure I can put this show together. And also, if you don't want to go through Patreon, another way you can support the show is at thefitcast.com/Amazon. That will send you right back to the Amazon front page. And if you buy anything through that, Amazon will just kick a little bit back towards the FitCast. You'll still get the same prices, the same shipping. Everything is exactly the same. Amazon just makes less money. So as long as you don't have some severe devotion to giving Jeff Bezos more money, you can kick a little bit back towards the FitCast to support the show that way as well. And God, like I said, Jill has a ton of stuff coming up in 2016. So make sure that you're following her on Twitter and check her out on Facebook so you can be up to date on everything that she has going on. And it's going to be a hell of a year, Jill.
It's going to be crazy. I know. I need to keep up with what you've got going on too. So it's going to be a fun time. And I'm sure everyone listening has a lot of plans and a lot of things they're getting ready to implement. So it's going to be the year of action. I'll tell you that.
Hell yeah, we'll be. And worst case scenario, I think we're going to be getting a new Star Wars movie this year. We're getting a new Ghostbusters movie this year. So I think we're going to be in good hands. I think it's going to be a good year either way.
Very cool. Thanks so much for having me, Kevin.
Well, thank you, Jill. And for everyone else out there, thank you for listening to this episode. You can check it out on iTunes, subscribe on there, submit a review if you enjoy it. And like I said, if you're a Patreon supporter, stick around because you're going to get 20 more minutes with Jill Coleman. Take care.